Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Paul Dottino, I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513, or hashtag Giants Chat if you want to participate on Twitter. Thanks a lot for joining us today. Paul, how are you?
Great to see you, John. It's raining out here in Jersey, but hey, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? At least it's not snowing. It is February, so you can take what you can. And obviously, we're just still 2 days off the Super Bowl. I'm sure you and Lance talked about the game a lot yesterday, and I thought there was an interesting article on ESPN today from John Clayton ranking all 51 Super Bowls. But before we get to that, I want to give my quick take on the game, because I know you and Lance had a chance to talk about it yesterday. Real fast, I think there's been too much focus, in my opinion, on the play calling of the Falcons' offense. Now, I will agree, in one specific situation, once the Falcons got into field goal range, up 8, inside the Patriots 30, and it was 2nd and 11, I don't agree with passing that situation. I think once you're in field goal range there, all you need is a score to end the game, and I think that's where you can run it. You can also criticize Matt Ryan for taking the sack, and then you can criticize Matthews for the holding penalty, which pushed him further
back. No question.
So if you're going to get on play calling, I think that's where you get on the play calling. Also execution by Ryan and Matthews. And I think if you're going to blame the Falcons offense for anything, I think it's that specific possession. Otherwise, with the time of possession in the Patriots' favor the way it was, I don't think the offense of the Falcons had many opportunities in the second half or even in the second quarter of that game. So I'm not going to go nuts on the Falcons' offense. And we talked about this last week, Paul. We thought the difference in this game would be the Falcons' inability to stop the Patriots' offense. Obviously, in the first half, they did a phenomenal job, got after Brady. They played a lot better than I think probably both of us thought they would be able to in that game. But in the second half, Brady figured out what they were doing. They made adjustments, and then all of a sudden it was march the ball up and down the field goal for the Patriots, which I think is kind of what me and you thought would happen for more of the game than it actually did. Mm-hmm. But I think the Patriots actually wound up, in terms of total points, around where we thought they would, around 30, with the overtime they got to 35. So to me, that wasn't too much of a surprise.
Okay.
But again, to me, the difference was, in the end, the Falcons' defense could not stop the Patriots' offense when they needed to. And really, all they needed to do was get 1 out of 5 necessary stops in the second half. If you stop the Patriots from scoring on any one of their final 4 drives, or stop them in either one of their 2-point conversions. So those are 6 opportunities. The Patriots, 2 final touchdowns, the field goal, 2 2-point conversions, and then the overtime touchdown. They get a stop in any one of those 6 spots. Any one of the 6, the Falcons win the game. They were 0-4-6 in those situations.
And they got the benefit of an extra point that went clanking off an upright, too.
Correct. Correct. And how many plays in the first half did the Patriots mess up by either drops or bad Brady throws?
I'll be honest with you, John. I thought that the Patriots had 6 catchable balls in the first 3 quarters. Now, if you want to call them drops or not, because there was some tough catches in there.
Are you including Brady overthrows where the guy was open or no?
No, I'm talking about where they got fingertips, at least fingertips on the ball.
Okay.
6 catchable balls that weren't made. I thought the Patriots played like garbage the first 3 quarters.
And then I thought Brady missed a couple wide open guys,
too. He did.
And now I think partially that's probably because he was rattled by the Falcon pass rush a little bit. Wasn't comfortable. Give them credit. Their defensive line did a great job. Jarrett, the young defensive tackle, was phenomenal. I think if they won, he could have been the MVP of that game. Deion Jones obviously made a couple of plays in that contest. But look, the bottom line is that in the end, I think the balanced and better team probably won the game despite the issues the Falcons had on defense. The Patriots, you know what it reminded me of actually? This game reminded me a lot of the Cowboy-Packer game in the second round of the playoffs. Except the Patriots did enough to come back and win, and the Cowboys came up just short.
See, for me, the characteristics of what happened in the trenches along the line of scrimmage, because the Falcons owned the trenches through 3 quarters. The Patriots owned the trenches in the 4th quarter.
I would say 2.5 quarters. I think the Patriots started to turn this around second half of the third quarter.
Okay, fair. But that's what happened in that infamous Giants-Niners playoff game of some years ago, which most people had considered the greatest playoff collapse or one of the worst in NFL history. And what I remember seeing in that game was the Giants kept rushing with their front 4.
Which one specifically?
The 2002 game.
Oh, the 2002 game. I got you. Okay.
And the front four was gassed, and they couldn't get home, and Steve Young just ate them alive. Well, that's kind of what happened with Tom Brady. The Falcons' front four was absolutely invisible in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, they ran out of gas.
They ran out of gas.
Oh, you can't blame them. They were on the field for 40 minutes of the game.
93 Tom Brady snaps. I mean, that's insane.
No.
And the Pats' O-line seemed to get stronger with that, and the Falcons' D-line wilted. And on the other side, no excuse in my mind. And I did hammer the play calling, John. I'm much more angry about that than you are. But the Falcons' O-line, they crumbled in the fourth quarter, and they were only on the field for 45 snaps. Is that right?
Crumbled, how many? I think, is a little strong.
They didn't make the plays.
Yeah.
They were
terrible. The holding penalty and the sack fumble, those are three game-changing plays.
Terrible plays.
I can't argue that.
And Devonta Freeman didn't help by doing a little ole.
On the sack fumble, right? I know. I don't know what he was doing. And it's not like he didn't see the guy. Unless maybe he was supposed to go out in the route. I don't know, but you're right. I can't really get on people, and I know people have been killing Matt Ryan for this. How am I going to kill a guy that goes 17 of 23 for 284 yards, two touchdowns, and no picks?
The only criticism that I would give Matt Ryan.
Now, again, he didn't play a perfect game, but this was not his. If you're going to pick somebody to blame for this game, it's not Matt Ryan.
No. If I were to say anything, though, I do think that he perhaps could have worked the play clock down better after they got the 2.5 score lead, and they were snapping the ball a little early in the play clock. Now, that's the quarterback's. That's in his hands.
I think that's fair.
That's the only thing I would say that I think Matt Ryan could be hit on. Otherwise, what could you say about the guy? He was really good.
He was really good. Now, besides that specific drive where they were in field goal range and basically gave that away because they got too aggressive and tried to throw, where else did you have a specific issue with the play call?
Well, I had issues with the third and one. When they went back to pass and they had the sack fumble,
okay.
They gave the Patriots the ball at the 25.
No argument. That's fair.
That, to me, that's where Niagara Falls opened up.
Okay.
And
I think that's a fair criticism.
And up to that point, and we'll talk about this with our question of the day, I thought it was a horrible football game, and it wasn't even worth watching until that point. When the Patriots recovered that ball, I turned to the wife and I said, guess what? Patriots are in this game. Tom Brady's got a chance to come back and win this game. Right then and there, I knew that Niagara Falls had opened up. And that was a horrible, horrible play call by the Falcons. And from that point forward, they just, in my mind, it was a litany and a comedy of errors. And I will say, if you want to, and it's a little bit more difficult to get on Ryan for this, when he took the sack with 3.5 minutes to go.
No, and that's fair, too.
Well,
I said that.
And here's the one question and why I might not do it.
And Matt Ryan, after the game, did, by the way, say, I should not have taken that sack. And he actually took the blame.
In retrospect.
Mm-hmm. He did.
I had a conversation with a couple of longtime NFL people about this yesterday. And I said, here's the problem with today's NFL and one of the reasons why it's so watered down and it is so inferior to the 70s and 80s. How many quarterbacks in today's NFL, John, think about this for a second before you answer. How many quarterbacks in today's NFL do you think are trusted in that spot to opt out of what the coach sends in? Furthermore, how many quarterbacks in today's game are not robotic video game quarterbacks and have the wherewithal? Back in the 70s and 80s, we used to call quarterbacks field generals because they had complete command of the game, of the playbook, of the players, of the situation. Do you think Roger Staubach or Terry Bradshaw would have made that mistake? Or would they have opted out of the play or done something smarter than what Matt Ryan did?
I mean, I'd say maybe half dozen.
There you go.
Maybe 10.
That's my point. I mean, Russell Wilson didn't opt out of a bad play when Seattle blew the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. He could have opted out of a bad play. He should have seen the coverage and should have thrown the ball away. He played mindless football. In that spot, you could argue Matt Ryan played mindless football. The quarterbacks in today's game are not field generals.
The question is, though, was the defensive alignment such that a pass there, the pass play they called, was there a high chance of success based on his pre-snap read?
Well,
I don't know the answer to that.
I'm going to go further. Again, you got a lot of these nouveau coaches or younger coaches
right.
who don't give the quarterbacks the freedom to get out of it.
Well, I'm sure he could have gotten out if he wanted.
Could he have? I'm not sure. I don't know. Quarterbacks can
always audible.
A lot of quarterbacks in today's game are given two options. They're given a run-pass option or an A-B option or a left-right option.
Okay.
Could he have just flat-out said, look, I am not throwing a ball here?
Yeah. No.
I don't think so. My guess is no.
I don't know. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us on Twitter. We appreciate it. You can check out the rest of the show as we now debate the most exciting Super Bowls of all time on Giants.com. Go check it out. And I think John Clayton's list on ESPN and ABC News also republished it, ranking the greatest Super Bowls of all time. So I think it's fair to say the most exciting because that's what people get into. And you could talk about well played as well. And surprisingly, and I'll disagree with this not as vehemently as Paul, but he has this game ranked, Super Bowl 51, as the best Super Bowl or most exciting Super Bowl in history. Now, here's the argument for it that I'll make. It was a record-setting Super Bowl for the head coach and the quarterback. It was the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history,
mm-hmm.
and the only overtime game in Super Bowl history. So at the surface, I think it has a lot going for it. The best quarterback performance in Super Bowl history in terms of yards. So I think it does have a lot going for it, but, and I think you and Dave kind of convinced me before the show, to put it at number one, given the first 2.5 quarters weren't exactly riveting TV. The play, as you mentioned, not as strong. Some sloppiness. One might be a little strong, but it's definitely to me a top 5 or top 10.
Well, I think Dave Dominick, our producer, came up with a really good litmus test here because we had discussed this very topic, John, coming in. And you're right. We were very much against this game. But I thought his comment was really, really good. He said, if you got a chance to watch this game on replay, on like NFL Network Classics or ESPN Classics, Super Bowl Classics, and had the opportunity. You saw it was in your TV listings. Next Monday, 7 o'clock at night, nothing else is on. They're replaying Super Bowl 51 between the Patriots and the Falcons. Are you going to sit there for 3.5 hours and watch this whole game through because it's that much of a classic?
No, you'll probably,
it's that great?
You'll probably wait till the second half and turn it on with 6 minutes to go in the third quarter.
I'll be honest, I'm waiting till the last half hour. And then I'm turning it on.
I think that's fair.
Because that's how I felt about this game. I think there are many other games in Super Bowl history that from start to finish, they were compelling, great football, great players, great plays, great coaches. To me, if you've got a game that for the most part was already a 2+ score differential, it's kind of hard to be riveted on every single play.
No, that's true.
I did a quick check, and you could confirm this for me, although it's kind of hard to count it up now. I think it was 18 Super Bowls now that I counted had a final score differential of 7 points or less. 18 of them.
Okay.
Of the 51 that have been played. So, you know, if you want to start, I suppose you could go right there and say, okay, let's start with the touchdown or less final scores. You could go there. But I kind of like... Show me the games where there was never more than the 10-point differential from start to finish.
Where every play meant everything. If one big mistake here or there can change the game.
That's where I
go. And I got to be honest with you. I mean, to me, let's start here. For it to be considered one of the best Super Bowls of all time, it has to have a great ending. And I think that's a big part of this. It has
okay
to be
that.
A game that gets decided in the final 2 minutes of the game. And I
I'm
think
okay
that will really narrow us down a lot here.
Okay.
Now, just because the game does finish in the last 2 minutes doesn't mean it is great. But I think in order for the game to be great, it has to have been decided in the final 2 minutes. And I think when you take a look at the rest of the games on this list, and I'll go through them right now, I think most of them qualify. And we can dither on the order here
okay.
as we go along, okay?
Yeah.
And where exactly if we think it's ranked properly. But I think he has a lot of these in the right ballpark. So,
okay.
as I mentioned, John Clayton is Super Bowl 51, number one. Number two, he has Norwood, wide right, Giants, Bills, Super Bowl 25.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to argue that. Lower scoring game. The Bills, obviously a really good offense, didn't have the ball hold on in that game because of the Giants' strategy. But there you go. That's number two. Number three, and I have no problem with this either, the Super Bowl a couple years ago, the Malcolm Butler pick at the end of the game. And the reason to me, and I'll almost argue this should be number one, because you go from Brady going down and scoring the touchdown, the Patriots are going to win. The Seahawks get it inside the three. No, the Seahawks are going to win. In fact, I got Patriot fans texting me like that's the worst loss I've ever seen.
Wow.
Then it goes the other way,
yeah,
and the Patriots win. So to me, if you wanted to make that game number
one, that's a great component.
I would have no problem with it because it went back and forth three times in the final 2 minutes. That's fantastic.
Remember the Niners-Bengals?
Yeah, true.
You know, with John Candy sitting in the front row?
Mm-hmm.
That game changed twice in the last couple of minutes.
Now, number four, Super Bowl 13. This is Steelers 35, Cowboys 31. Obviously, I don't have a great feel for this game, Paul. You can probably give the fans a better idea for how this game went. Is this the Jackie Smith drop?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. That's a bad one for Cowboys fans right there.
I mean,
how close was it at the end?
You know, Dallas rallied. It wasn't a nip and tuck, every single play mattered kind of game.
But I guess why this game is up there, though, these are probably two of the better teams to meet in a Super Bowl, right? A high-quality football.
Yes.
This
yes.
is Staubach Bradshaw, right?
No question.
So, and you have some of the best Hall of Famers in this game on both sides of the ball, and it was close.
Yes. And quite honestly, anytime you're involved in the Steel Curtain and that dynasty, it's going to be hard not to include them.
Is this the first time those two teams faced
the
Super Bowl?
This was the second one.
That's the second time.
This is the second
one.
Okay,
got it.
The first one, where do you have the first one? Did he have the first one anywhere in here?
It's got to be. He ranks all 51.
All the way down here, 15. And that game was a close game.
Right. That was Super Bowl 10.
And that, so
this was the 70. One was 74, and one was 77, right?
Or 79. 70, so this is 79. That one was 76.
79 and 76.
Unfortunately for Jackie Smith, he'll never be able to live that down, but that's the drop in the end zone.
For you folks that haven't seen it, he basically ran a little slant middle of the end zone, wide open, slides to catch the ball, hits him right in the numbers, and bounces off.
They busted the coverage. There was nobody there.
It was about, like a 15-yard throw, you'd say?
Probably.
15,
I can't
20
remember
yards,
exactly,
something like that?
Yeah, I mean, they were in the red zone.
And it was wide open.
Oh,
I
my
mean,
goodness.
It couldn't have been a better throw either.
There's not a soul on the face of the planet who can't feel bad for him.
No, it's not
it's bad.
And then, of course, this is one of your favorite games. The Patriots and Rams back in 2002,
mm-hmm.
Super Bowl 36, the, you know, Kevin Dyson reaching with the ball for the goal line.
Again, to me, that was one of the great finishes, but there was a 14-point deficit in the third quarter here that Tom Brady was able to build up. So it was two full touchdowns. It was more than 10.
Oh, I take it back. I'm sorry. I was wrong. This is not the Kevin Dyson play. This is Patriots-Rams. This is not Rams-Titans.
I'm sorry.
I know. I screwed it up.
Yeah, because I thought you were going in order.
I should have went in order, which is why I misread the game. That's my fault. This was Patriots-Rams, the Brady's first Super Bowl off of the tuck game, right?
Yes.
And this is when he had the last second comeback. And I think, was this the Isaac Brooks long catch? I think that was also the game against Tennessee in that game. But this is the Brady comeback in the Adam Vinatieri game winning field goal as time expired.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And, you know, anytime you've got a field goal in the final seconds, it's certainly going to be incredibly dramatic. But does that necessarily mean the whole game was? And again, these are all the questions that we're kind of reviewing.
Number six, we got 42, Giants and Patriots. Obviously, everybody know what happened in that game. They have the Tyree catch, the Plaxico, the fourth down to Steve Smith, the Jacobs run up the middle for the first down, all that sort of good stuff in that game. So that made the top 10 at number six. Number seven, the game I just mentioned, that was mm-hmm. the Kevin Dyson one-yard short play. Rams beat the Titans 23-16. Super Bowl III, I think this is interesting. Jets 16, Colts 7. So it's not even a one-score game. It's a two-score game at the end. Is this that it was just such an upset that it has to be top 10?
That's why I think it's there, because of the historic value. And it was a low-scoring game, but you never had the opinion, and I was a real young pup in those days, but I have seen that game in full. Johnny Unitas comes off the bench, and the Jets are wondering, uh-oh. Is it too late or too soon for Johnny U to come off, because he relieves Earl Morrall, and the Jets start shaking that could Johnny U do this, but not to be.
All right, number nine, we have Niners and Bengals. This is the game you mentioned, the John Taylor touchdown, the last second drive by Joe Montana. This is one of the first Super Bowls I remember.
Oh, it was
to
great.
Be honest with you,
great
I was
game.
So this was 89. I was about. I was seven. So this is one of the first Super Bowls that I remembered. I remember the reason I really I'm seven. What the heck do I know about anything? The reason I rooted for the Bengals in that game real hard, I love the icky shuffle.
Oh!
I was seven. I remember that's the first actual game I remember. And I remember the Giants game, 86 season, 87 Super Bowls. My dad went to the game.
Okay.
And I remember him going and coming back with, like, the pendant and all that stuff. All right, and he had the seat cushion and all that.
That's cool.
I remember that part of it. I don't really remember watching the game much because was, like, four.
Well, if we're going to go into admissions, I actually remember watching Super Bowl IV between the Chiefs and the Vikings. Watched it on TV, black and white TV in my parents' living room.
All right, number 10, Patriots-Panthers, February 1st, 2004. I don't know about this
I'm not loving that one.
I mean, Jake Delhomme did keep pace with them, but you never really got the feeling that the Panthers are going to win that game watching that.
I didn't.
I don't know how that's ahead of the 46. I don't get that one. That one, I'm not so sure. And I don't know how it's ahead of Super Bowl 43 either, because this was a fantastic game.
Santonio Holmes.
The Steeler-Cardinal game. You had the James Harrison interception return for a touchdown. You had the Santonio Holmes back of the end zone. That was a phenomenal football game. I don't know how that's 11. To me, that has to be in the top 10.
You could maybe argue top 5.
I absolutely.
It's a really great game.
Wonderful game. Then they got Super Bowl 32, Broncos 31, Packers 24, Favre, Elway, Terrell Davis. Wow, the Broncos are 12-point underdogs in that game, huh? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I looked at this here. But again, I think that's more of a romantic thing with Elway. That's why it's as high as it is.
Because that was Elway's first, and the next year he beat the Falcons.
Right.
Niners 31, Ravens 34. That's Super Bowl 47. That was a comeback. It was a fun game. It was back and forth, a lot of offense. I could see that being around 13. I think that's okay.
See, for me, because of the blackout, when I had the power failure, that to me takes away some of the game.
Okay. Number 14, they have the first Niners-Bengals matchup back in 82, 26-21.
Kenny Anderson.
See, now this is a 20-0 lead.
Yeah, it's a terrible game.
So,
again, that's one of the greatest.
46? Oh, there it is, finally.
That's one of the greatest comebacks.
Right.
And maybe the best comeback if you discount the one we just saw.
Right.
They were getting crushed, but it was a terrible game.
Yeah. Whew. Number 15, Super Bowl 10. Steelers 21, Cowboys 17. Another great game between, you know, the Cowboys and Steelers. Classic 70s matchup. Hard to argue that. Was that really close at the end?
It was competitive. But once again, you know, I never was biting my nails on the game.
Okay.
It was competitive all the way through, though.
Now, finally, Super Bowl 46, Giants 21, Patriots 17. And you know me, I try my best not to be a home shill on this show. I try to be Mr. Contrarian. How was that number 16? I mean, come on now. Really?
And then, first of all, the game was never, ever in, out of control.
No, it was
ever.
One score game the whole way.
And the history. When you throw in the undefeated season on top of it, how could you not put that higher?
Well, no, that wasn't the undefeated season. 42 is the undefeated season.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong
this
one.
This is 46.
Wrong one. Wrong
Nevertheless,
one.
The
sorry.
Game's decided in the final 2 minutes.
Correct.
The game-winning drive.
Yes.
Come on.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to go past 16 because those are all three Giants ones.
Actually, remember, Brady threw over the span of two quarters, had like 12 straight completions in that game, where he was just incredible.
Just out of curiosity, I'm trying to find where 86 was.
Going through all.
I'm not going through all of them. I just want to find the final Giants one, just so people have an idea where it ranked. And it's not going to rank high, because obviously it was such a blowout.
Here it is, 38.
Number 38. 38. So that's where you are, folks. You can give us a call. Let us know where you think some of these games should rank, what your favorite Super Bowl was, and we can have this debate. It's a classic sports talk radio debate. It's fun.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah. Absolutely.
I think 46 is way too low on number 16. I think that's got to be top 12, I would say. There's got to be three or four games you could jump that ahead of, I would think. Like, I like that game better than the Ravens-Niners game.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't understand that at all.
And I liked it better than the Patriots Panthers game too.
I
mean,
I agree.
That game get me excited. Eh.
He's got a few like Steelers Cardinals has to be top 10. How do you have that out of your top 10?
Though I do think generally, if we're looking at the top 15 and we only disagree with like three of them or four maybe, I think that's a pretty good list.
Yeah, I mean within the scope, I guess we're probably not far off in terms of what grouping we'd have them in. But then now you got to start
correct.
Fussing with him.
All right, 201-939-4513. Let's go to Charles in New Mexico first, and then Jason in Maine will be second. They've been holding the longest. Charles, what's up, pal?
Hey, guys. How are you, man?
Great. Hi. How are you?
Good. I agree with you, Paul. That was a boring Super Bowl until, like, midway through the third quarter, I think. And I think the play calling by the Falcons showed the inexperience of either Matt Ryan or their offensive coordinator.
Well, I mean, I don't think you can blame Matt Ryan for the play calling, per se. I think if you're going to take a hit there, I think you give the hit to Kyle Shanahan. And I think, and again, I think those are the three plays that me and Paul mentioned that I think are the ones that you really want to give him enough heat on. But here's the other thing, Charles, and I just want to emphasize this one more time, and then I'll let you go and make your point. Even if you do those things on offense on those three plays, if your defense just gets one stop.
Yeah.
I mean, the Patriots' final five drives were 13 for 75 and a touchdown, 12 for 72 and a field goal, 5 for 25 and a touchdown, 10 for 91 and a touchdown, 8 for 62 and a touchdown, and 2 two-point conversions in there. If you just stop them on one of those five drives or one of those 2 two-point conversions, you win the ball game. And they were unable to do that.
Can I finally say enough to talk about Vic Beasley, please? Great regular season, did zero in the postseason.
It's only his second year.
Okay.
Let's give the guy a break.
But I heard about him for 2 weeks. Vic Beasley's going to wreck Tom Brady. He did nothing in the postseason.
I warn people about making him out to be Von Miller. He's not Von Miller.
He is not. He's a tweener. You know how I feel about tweeners.
Yes, Von Miller is a different class.
He's a different class.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, but still, you know, it was funny because, you know, I'm waiting for you guys to pick up, and one guy tweeted on Twitter that he's watching the replay of the game and he's still waiting for the Falcons to run the ball two other times and kick a field goal and win.
Exactly.
You know?
Heck, you know what? They could have kneeled the ball twice and kicked a field goal to win the game.
Yeah.
Mike Greenberg said that the other day, too. But it was just – I was sitting there, like you said, Paul, you said to your wife, they're coming back. I told my wife after those plays, when Jones made the catch and they ran on first down and lost a couple yards and they passed on second down and he got sacked, like you said, the running back played Ole, you know, look out football. He turned around and told Matt Ryan, look out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
After that, I told my wife, I said, Brady's going to bring him back.
Oh, my goodness. She just knew it.
I'll be honest with you, I never thought the Patriots were out of the game. I've seen too many weird things, and especially with the Patriots and Brady, I never thought the game was over. Now, was I confident they were going to come back? Absolutely not. But I never sat there and looked at my brother and, you know, and our friends that we were watching the game with and said, guys, this game's over. I never tuned out. I thought it was still very much a ball game.
You know, I have two things that I would love to ask Dad Quinn about. And I don't know. I'm holding you up. I'm sorry. Did you have another point? I'll get to it after you hang up.
No, you guys are great. I thank you for taking my call. You guys have a great day. I'll call back. We'll talk about some free agents, man.
All right, man. You got it.
Charles, appreciate it.
Two questions I'd like to ask Dan Quinn. All right. Question number one. You've seen Tom Brady do this live and in person before in terms of being able to fight through and keep teams in a game and do what he's done. Mm-hmm. Did you not go over all the possible scenarios about how you need to stuff a pillow in his face and suffocate him and finish him off and not give him any opportunities to come back?
Well, you
did
could,
you not do that?
You could know that that's the case. Being able to do it is another question. It's easier said than done. You know what I mean?
Well, and game plan-wise, think about this, folks. A couple years earlier, when he was defensive coordinator with Seattle, who was the number one weapon on the Patriots' offense that night? It was Shane Vereen, who caught 11 passes and destroyed them out of the backfield.
Hello, James White.
Exactly why on Friday, and then on, was it on Thursday? And then on Saturday, I did Tony Page's show.
Oh.
I did a Super Bowl preview, and I said, James White will be the X factor in this game because I fully believed that Belichick was going to copycat until Quinn took it away. Remember what they tell you. Do it until somebody stops you. Mm-hmm. So I fully believed that James White was going to be the X factor in the game. Said it on FAN. And wouldn't you know it, they kept letting him do it. And Quinn did nothing to stop it.
You know, well, I think they didn't want to go out of that man-to-man. It was working so well in the secondary, they didn't want to come out of it. And when you play man-to-man, unless you dedicate a safety to the kid, it's not going to work. And it's funny you say that. My buddy ran a contest in the playoffs this year. It's almost like a fake fantasy contest where you pick a player from each team each week and you can't pick the guy more than once. One of my running backs in the Super Bowl was James White.
Oh, nice.
So I was with you. I thought he would have an effect. And you know who my other guy was in this game, my sleeper, was Malcolm Mitchell. And I was right about that, too, because I thought, like we talked about last week, I thought the game plan for the Falcons, against a Patriots team that doesn't have dynamic wide receivers is to man them up, rough them up, they're small,
right,
and try to take them away. And I think they did a great job of that. And I figured, and I thought to myself, well, who's the most physically gifted Patriot wide receiver in terms of size, speed? It's probably Malcolm Mitchell. So, and he actually did have probably the biggest game besides that one crazy Edelman catch.
I agree.
But I thought the Falcons had a pretty good game plan defensively. They played exactly the way that I thought they would. They were very physical. They got called for those three holding penalties on the one drive. But you know what? That's the price you pay when you play that way. You live with it.
And they were legit.
Absolutely good calls.
They were legit.
No argument. No argument about the calls at all. But I think you make the officials make those calls.
Yeah.
And I think the Falcons certainly did that. So I didn't have a problem with the way they played defensively until obviously they couldn't make any stops at all in the second half. But I think the Patriots adjusted to what they did, and then the Falcons failed to adjust back.
And
what
again,
New England did.
Tip your cap to the Patriots offensive line, because once they got it going, it didn't matter that they were on the field for 90-plus plays. They finished.
And by the way, talking about drafting players, Grady Jarrett, who was a draft pick back, I believe, in 2015, did a heck of a job.
Oh,
he was very good.
No question.
And I think he would have been the MVP. Then another draft pick, cornerback Jaylen Collins, had a rough night.
He did.
He had a rough night.
We'll leave it there. I don't want to pick on
the kid. No, I don't want to pick on the kid either, but he had a rough night. 201-939-4513. Jason in Maine is up next. Jason, how are you? Jason, how you doing, pal? Sorry about that.
That's all right. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Hello.
Good. Hey, I just want to make a comment on the game. I didn't realize you guys were talking about the greatest Super Bowl games. It's a good topic. I don't think there's a doubt in my mind. I have to go with the Giants and Bills back in the early 90s. I think sometimes when you judge on these games, you kind of think, well, if I watch the game again, do I fast-forward certain quarters? Do I, you know, go through certain parts of the game
exactly.
that, you know, really weren't that exciting? And when I look at this game, I mean, is there a part of that game that was boring?
No.
I mean, name a part of that game that was, you know, that wasn't filled with excitement. I mean, it went back and forth. It was game plans. It was you know, there was just so many exciting things in that game. It was tremendous.
And, you know, you make a great point, because if we use Dave Dominick's scenario, if that game comes on Classic, John, or if it comes on NFL Network, I can't even get up to go to the bathroom. I'm watching every play of Super Bowl 25 over and over and over again. It's that great.
And if you look at it, the largest deficit in that game was 12-3 after the Hostetler sack, where he did not lose the ball, which could have easily been a touchdown. A couple people tweeted me, by the way, over the weekend that was their favorite Giants play in Super Bowl history after we did our little video on that last week.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a big play. So 9 points was the biggest deficit. That was in the second quarter. And then shortly thereafter, the Giants cut into that lead, made a 12-10 on the Stephen Baker touchdown.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, any time that you can go through an entire game and not be 100% sure, you're not even even relatively sure who's going to win, because every play means something. I like what John said before, where every play means something. That, to me, is going to boost that game real high on the list.
And the one thing to me, Jason, it's a shame, because I think he was a great player, and I don't think people talk about him enough because of things like this. You know, Thurman Thomas in that game.
Oh, yeah.
15 for 135 on the ground with a touchdown, 5 for 55 through the air. And what does everybody remember?
Well, wide right. But you know what?
And then in the future, he had big fumbles in the Super Bowl, too. It's a shame.
But again,
hell of a play.
That's Belichick, as the defensive coordinator, understanding the matchup mm-hmm. and telling his defense, we're going to let Thurman Thomas run for 100 yards. That's not going to beat us.
Why did they run him more? They ran it 25 times and threw it 30. If you're running it 6.5 yards per pop, why aren't you running that ball more?
Because that was the Jim Kelly red gun offense, which was
K-gun, right?
Well, it was the red gun.
Oh, they called it the red gun.
The red
I thought
gun.
It was the K-gun they called it.
May have been one of the
okay,
names.
I gotcha.
Because they had the red helmets, too. They
right.
called it the red gun
I got
also. Could have been K-gun as well. But the point being, they believed in spreading the ball around and the weapons that he had.
Yeah, and they had good ones. Andre Reed, James Lofton, Hall of Famers.
You know, what they weren't counting on is that Mark Collins would beat the living stuffing out of Andre Reed. And Banks did, too.
Was there a greater offensive drive in that game? You know which one I'm talking about.
Well, O.J. Anderson's, you know, famous uppercut. I mean, you know.
Oh, man.
I know. Fan, think about the plays, and that's the other thing. You know, John, I love what you said before about, had the Falcons just come up with one of six different stops, they win the game?
It's actually seven when I looked at it a second time.
And if you think about the Giants' Super Bowl 25 win against the Bills, if you literally do go back and watch that when it replays again, you'll find there are as many as 12 different plays that could have gone either way in that game that would have changed the entire outcome. That's how incredibly razor-thin that game is. And, of course, so was the missed field goal at the end.
Yep. Just a couple more things. Just wondering, now that we're on that subject, because it wasn't what I called about, but and then I'll just get off the air and listen to you guys. The first one is just, do you think that game would have been any different had Phil Simms started in that game healthy? And the other thing is that I wanted to ask was, when it comes to the draft, when it comes to free agents, is there a particular place that you think this team really needs a free agent, an experienced free agent, and not a draft pick? And I'll end with that, and I thank you guys. Have a good day.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it.
You
good
go
call.
To the free agency, and I'll go to the Giants question.
Yeah, you're much better qualified to answer the game, question about the 90 game. You lived and breathed that much more
yes.
than I did back then. And I know this is not the answer fans probably want to hear, and it's probably not a great one because I don't think there's a lot of players available that fit this formula. But I still think it's more important to bring in a veteran offensive tackle, to be honest with you. I mean, it's hard to depend on rookie tackles. You know, there aren't that many Tyron Smith and Jack Conklins out there and Zach Martins that show up year – well, Martin didn't even play tackle. There aren't that many Jack Conklins that show up in year number one and are really good tackles. It just doesn't happen a whole lot. Even, you know, a guy like, you know, Matthews, the Falcons tackle, he was struggled his first year. Now he's very good.
Rough game the other day.
Yeah, well, the hold was bad. Taylor Lewan, he struggled a lot his first couple of years, mm-hmm. and now he's turned into a pretty darn good tackle. So I think if you're looking for a veteran free agency, I think you – and it's going to be hard to find – you know, you mentioned Riley Reiff. If you want to go Whitworth, the really, really veteran 35-year-old from the Bengals, he still has some tread on the tire, maybe. I think that's where you go. Now here's your Super Bowl 26.
I'm going to second Reiff.
26 question, sorry.
Reiff would be the guy most
right.
on my
mm-hmm.
radar. In terms of your question, I think what you have to consider is would the Giants have gotten there, and I think a lot of the players on that team will tell you they may not have gotten there and won the NFC Championship game that year had Phil been healthy.
Why? And that was 25, by the way, not 26, I'm sorry.
Right. Haas's mobility and his ability to get out of the pocket and to avoid some of the rush that was going on in the latter stretches of that season and then in through the playoffs. There are guys on that team who will tell you flat out, they love Phil Simms, but they're not so sure that Phil, who was much more of a statue, much more of a Kurt Warner type, he could have survived some of the assaults. Not that the Giants' O-line was bad, because those were the Suburbanites. They were good. But there were some damn good defensive lines in those days, too. And specifically, in the game against the Niners, when Matt Barr kicks the field goal to beat San Francisco, to throw in the three-peat
possibility. All the field goals, yep.
Okay? In that game, there are numerous cases where Haas buys time. He runs for a few also, yardage. As well, but there are times he buys time. I don't know if Phil would have been able to do it. And may I say, Phil Simms is my favorite player of all time.
And overall, Phil Simms is a better quarterback than Jeff Hostetler.
Without a question. Phil Simms is a borderline Hall of Famer. But that's my answer to you. I don't know that they get there if Phil was the quarterback. And I hate to say that.
How about just the Super Bowl on its own?
The Super Bowl on its own, I would say Phil... It's hard for me to say this because Haas did what he did, and the throw to Stephen Baker for the touchdown at the end of the half is sensational.
It's okay to say that Phil Simms would have done a better job in that one particular game.
Okay, I'm going to say.
Okay, that's okay. That's why I asked you the question.
I just don't want to disrespect Haas.
We love Haas.
He did what he did, and I don't want to disrespect him. I really don't.
Dean in Connecticut, he's up next on Big Blue Kickoff Live on line number one. Dean, how are you, pal?
Good morning, gentlemen. How we doing?
How are you, Dean?
Hey, I had a top five for you. I mean, I'm only 34 years old, and I've only seen a little bit, but I rank mine as best number one Super Bowl 42, of course, Giants-Patriots. Second best Super Bowl I ever seen was the Arizona Cardinals and the Steelers.
Okay, I like that. Absolutely.
Third Super Bowl 25 with the Giants with the Norwood miss.
Okay.
Four, I would have to go... Four is a toss-up. I got it. I mean, besides the Pats Seahawks and Super Bowl 46 with the Giants Pats, and five would be the Rams Titans. What do you guys think about that?
I have no problem with those. If that's your top six, I have no problem with that top six. I'm fine with that.
I think all of them are certainly top 10 on anybody's list.
Yep.
You know, I don't think you're far off. I will say, you know, the funny part about the undefeated season when the Giants wrecked the Patriots in Arizona, that game too, John, not just for its historic value, which is off the charts, obviously, the historic value of that game. That game was close the whole way, too.
Oh, sure it was.
I mean, there was not one point where you had to look away and you were like, oh, you know, this isn't going to be a game.
Well, let me see what the biggest deficit was. I'm not even sure if it was that ever a two-score game.
I don't think it was.
Let me see. 3-0, 7-3, 10-7, 14-10, 17-14.
I mean, you can't argue with the fact that the game was competitive every step of the way.
The biggest lead in that game was 4 points. That's pretty good.
You know what I mean?
Pretty good.
Absolutely. Hey, can I switch it up for a second here?
Yeah, sure.
How about the most depressing Super Bowl? Really quick. Giants go in, beat the Vikings 41-0. Go play the Ravens, lose 34-7. And I remember Jesse Armstead getting called. What was it, encroachment or something like that?
Oh, no. Armstead has a pick six on Trent Dilfer, and they called Keith Hamilton for a hold on Jamal Lewis. It was a horrible call. It was a ridiculous call. It's a call that never should have been made. And quite frankly, that pick six might have changed the entire complexion of the game.
Absolutely.
And you know what's worse about
that?
After Ron Dixon's kickoff return for a touchdown, which does provide the Giants a quick spark, what do you think happens? The Ravens take the ensuing kickoff for a touchdown, and on that play, there are three blatant penalties at the point of attack on the return. None of them get called, and the Giants, of course, get bombed into an avalanche.
Dean, what are you doing to me? He was in a good mood. Then you with the call here and call in and ask about the Ravens Super Bowl. Now I got to deal with a cranky Dottino for the last 15 minutes of this
show.
That
game makes me very cranky.
Well, hey, Miles in, I'm sure.
And by the way, that was ranked by Clayton as his third worst Super Bowl. If that makes you feel any better,
it was a horrible game. No matter, again, just a horrible game. Horrible game.
Thank you, Dean.
Can I just say something real quick?
Yeah, real fast.
I was talking to you last night about this young man. We were talking back and forth. His name is Joey Gagliardi. This poor 10-year-old boy lost his father on Christmas Eve, and he's going through some tough times, and I go over and talk to him about the Giants, and it seems like it brightens his life up, and it just means a lot to me that this football team can bring this kid joy and make him happy in these tough times, and I just want to thank the organization and thank you guys for this show to give me stuff to talk about with him. And this kid's sharp as a whip, and you'd be surprised as how much stuff he knows, and I just really wanted to thank you guys.
Hey, Dean, no problem. And if you're with him and you guys want to call into the show together, feel free. We'd love to have him on.
Fire up the internet, and we'll say hello.
Yes, next time I do that, I will.
Thank you, Dean. Appreciate the call,
Take care.
201-939-4513. You too. 201-939-4513. T in Maryland. He's up next. T, how's it going, pal?
Hey, what's going on, John? How you doing, Paulie?
Hey.
Guess what? I'm calling today unprovoked by Charlie today. So today is not a Charlie provoked call.
Okay, that's good.
What I did want to say is I was watching the game, and my girlfriend or fiance now, who's a diehard Giants fan, you know what? And she's not even, like, a football novelist, but she said, how come the same defensive linemen are still out there? She said, see, everyone talks about our defense, and we can rotate players. That was the main reason those guys got gassed on Sunday. And I was going to see if, Paul, did you pick up on that?
You know,
here's
the interesting point. Not only did they have the same guys out there because they don't have any depth on the defensive line. Again, it was all Beasley all season. But how about this, John? They didn't send any dogs in the second half. When their defense was getting gassed and Brady started munching it down the field and the Patriots' offensive line was taking control late third quarter into the fourth, what did the Falcons do? They sat back and only sent four. They never sent any extra guys. No five, no six-man pressure packages. Nothing. They never moved Brady off his spot in the fourth quarter. That was incredible to me. And I thought Quinn was a defensive, you know, wizard. Why would he allow Brady to sit on his spot, and why would he allow James White to do exactly what Shane Vereen had done 2 years earlier? I'm sorry. I don't understand that.
It baffles me. But real quick, I got my top five Super Bowls. Super Bowl 25, Bills Giants. And even though I'm a Giants fan, I got to give it to Joe Montana. Bengals 49ers.
Great.
I'll never forget that as a teenager watching just take the 49ers down the field. Rams and Titans, because it doesn't get any closer than that. The Pats and the Seahawks. And I agree with John about these two call quarterbacks who just go in with whatever the play is. Russell Wilson should have audibled and gave it to beast mode. And my top five would be the Giants and the Pats. Hey, John, love you, dude.
Thanks, T.
Tino, you are awesome. Love you, man. And I'll talk to you guys later.
Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, T. Good stuff.
Thank you.
Everyone's kind of on the same page with these games. I'm with that.
I mean, you know, it's funny because I think the emotions of the moment a lot of times play into when people
right.
do rankings like this, and they tend to forget, you know, the stuff from yesteryear, and they're just like, oh, this is so recent, this is still fresh, and they want to make it more than what it was. But, you know, I think if you really sit down and think about it, John, and again, I love Dave's thinking, you know, if the game was on Classic, if it was replayed on NFL Network tonight, make the litmus test. How much of that game would you watch? And I think that's a great test.
I think it is. I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. Now, here's a question for you. I'm not sure if you looked. What do you think Clayton's worst ranked
I did
Super
not
Bowl
look.
Is? What do you think it is? Take a guess.
Chargers?
Chargers 49ers. Very good.
Brutal game.
Brutal game. Brutal game. What do you think the second worst game they have?
Buccaneers?
No.
No.
Now, that game was that was a bad one. No, you're right. That was a bad one. He has the Buccaneer game, Bucks Raiders. Where the heck does he have Bucks Raiders? That game stunk.
That was not a good game.
No. Well, I'm sure it's in the bottom 10 here, but it's not the second worst.
All right. You're going to have to tell me.
85 Bears. Patriots.
Yeah.
That was a bad one.
And you know what? And here's the funny part about that, because that goes against everything I've just said for the last 50 minutes.
You'd watch that game?
The thing about that was the legendary Bears, the 85
right.
Bears with the 46 defense, Buddy Ryan, Mike Ditka, the fridge, Walter Payton's only Super Bowl. For that reason, I'd probably watch it even though the game was bad.
Third worst was Ravens-Giants. Fourth worst, Niners 55, Broncos 10.
Oh, dreadful.
Bad game.
Well, Redskins-Broncos. Horrible game.
Number 47, the fifth worst. They have the game here at the Meadowlands, the Seahawks-Broncos.
Dreadful game.
Dreadful game.
Cowboys-Bills.
Yeah.
That was dreadful.
That's coming up here. Yeah, he is at number 44, Cowboys-Bills.
Yeah, there are a bunch of them.
But, yeah, I want to see where this Bucks one is now because I can't believe it's not lower. Where the heck is this Bucks game? There he is at number 39, 48-21. To me, that's got to be worse than that.
Game was terrible.
Yeah, that was a bad game. I don't agree with that one. Steven in California, he's on line two. He's up next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Steven, how are you, buddy?
Hey, gentlemen, how are you?
Doing great.
Hi.
Hey, Paul, so value pick at running back. I know you mentioned Perrine, and I know it's still early in the process, but when I watch his film, and they're in that West Coast, that super spread air raid offense, he's never asked to block. And that worries me a little bit that we're going to have to teach a pro system to a running back.
I don't think
so
there's
an alternate.
There's no question that if he becomes a Giant, he is going to be a situational rotation back that will not be in those kinds of spots, because you're going to have Vereen as your third down guy if he stays. You know, I don't know where that triceps is right now. I haven't talked to him.
Is it tricep? It should be all right.
I hope he's okay. I'd like to see Vereen back. If he's your third down back and Perkins is your one and two, then to be honest with you, P. Ryan is a situational back. He's a goal line back. He's a short yardage back. Chances are you won't be asking him to block much. But I understand your point. It's well taken, and we talk about that all the time.
Perfect. So one guy I want you to start taking a look at for another late round value pick, Davion Smith out of Michigan. And I actually get excited watching him pass pro. I mean, he's been taught under Harbaugh. He knows that pro system. And as a runner, he's physical, he's tough, and he understands the inside zone game. So I think he's a great fit for the Giants to take a look at, especially, you know, late day two or late day three even.
Well, the question is, if you're going to add a running back to this mix, what role do you want that guy to play? You know, do you want him to be the goal line short yardage guy, as I want the addition to be, or are you of a different philosophy? You'd like the guy to compete with Perkins and maybe even be the number one guy ahead of Perkins on first and second down, or do you think maybe that Vereen should not be here and you need a third down back, or is Perkins your third down back? You got to answer those questions before you come at me with who you really want. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know any of that because free agency hasn't happened.
Okay. Here we are. Okay.
But still, when you're on a day three pick, you're picking, you're not picking plug and play guys. You're picking who do I see traits in that can make an NFL roster? And I see it in this kid. I think he's a great fit for our system. If you start watching some film on him, and I think you'll absolutely love his ability to pass pro.
I promise you I will do it.
Appreciate the call.
The way running backs have been devalued in the last many years, John.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Third and fourth round guys have roles.
You know who I like, by the way?
As running backs.
How much of the Senior Bowl did you watch?
I watched most of it.
Did you like Kareem Hunt? The kid out of Toledo? He played in college at 6'2", 225, power runner. He was down around 210 for the Senior Bowl itself. But I thought as a late round guy that could do something – I thought he broke some tackles. I thought he ran with some power. I was impressed with him.
In that game, he had some nice runs, but I have not studied the rest of his film.
Neither have I.
Yeah, say, overall. But initial impression was this is a guy I certainly would look at.
Right.
I want to see more,
Mm-hmm.
But, I think ultimately, again, the way running backs are undervalued now in terms of the draft, a third or fourth round pick on a running back, that's not a shot in the dark. You're expecting that guy to play.
Oh, yeah, he should be a starter.
So just because he's not a first or second rounder doesn't mean he's going to be a backup or a special teams guy. No, running backs play in the third and fourth round.
Line four, Jeff in Rhode Island. He's up next. Jeff, how are you?
Hey, fellas, how you doing today?
Hi. Doing great, Jeff. How are you, buddy?
Good. I'm doing okay. I was hoping the Falcons were going to win simply because the Patriots have had more than their share of success. For sure, and the Falcons, they're at the other end of the spectrum,
I agree.
I felt bad for that. I actually felt bad for the owner, Falcons owner, at the end of the game. I really wanted Atlanta to win because I got to tell you, it's not easy being a Giants fan in Rhode Island. Okay, now I got to live with these stew knots for the next year.
Jeff, I've had so many Giants fans tweet me about how isn't it great that Eli's still the only quarterback to have beaten Brady in a Super Bowl, and they actually told me they were rooting for the Patriots because they want Eli to be the only one to ever stick it to him. And if you want to adopt that philosophy to help you go to sleep at night, you're welcome to do it.
Yeah, to me, my favorite as a Giants fan, I got two favorite Super Bowls, of course. 2021 was, I was just, the Giants had been so downtrodden for so many years, and for them to win that Super Bowl, man, I was just so juiced up. It was unbelievable. But the second one would be 18-1 and done. That was a beautiful thing because it was all about me for a whole year at work, and I was loving that, to be sure, So,
excellent.
But Field General Paulie, that goes back to Chris Schenkel times, doesn't it?
There you go. Hey, you know what, though, Jeff? Think about it. And even John, when he thought about the question, said about half a dozen, right? That's just the way the game has evolved. These guys are now video game quarterbacks. They're not field generals anymore.
Right.
Starbucks and the Bradshaws and the Tarkentons don't exist.
I don't think it's the players' fault, though. I think it's the way they've been conditioned growing up. They're capable of it. They're just not asked to do it.
That's the thing. The way they're grooming quarterbacks now, they're plug-and-play passers. They're running the video game. They're the joysticks. That's all they are.
Yeah.
I have great appreciation for those great quarterbacks of yesteryear because they were field generals.
Yeah. Oh, I do, too, because I remember those days quite well. So, the Super Bowl's over. Now we got to think about moving forward with the Giants and getting our team back into the mix because we got to do that. It's a very important thing to do. So,
we agree, Jeff.
I'll be talking to you soon, guys. Have a good day.
Thank you, buddy. Good to hear from you. Final call of the show, Andrew in Stanhope, New Jersey. He's going to wrap us up. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, guys. I don't know if you mentioned the Mark Ingram play in the Buffalo Super Bowl.
Great play.
Marking. It was phenomenal. Do you remember that one, John?
That's
of course.
Probably, yes. In my mind, the best third down play.
He made, what, about a half dozen Bills miss on that play?
I think it was six.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were underrated, too, the Giants receivers. And also, Paul probably remembers, it was Dallas, Pittsburgh, Super Bowl. Roger Staubach was the quarterback. He hit the tight end in the end zone, which would have been the game-winning touchdown. But
yeah,
he
talked about it.
Yeah, Jackie Smith, we talked about that. Mm-hmm.
I really believe that he and Scott Norwood are the two guys who are most vilified for their failures in Super Bowls.
If Russell Wilson hadn't already won one, I think he'd be on that list, too, for
probably.
The interception. But since he already had won one, it's probably not as bad for him.
And I can't – I'll be honest with you. I can't even imagine being in their shoes. I could not. I mean, think about it. That's just like the whole universe sees you muff that up. That's
I mean,
bad.
For someone in your position, that would be the equivalent of you calling the Super Bowl, having a game-winning catch, and misidentifying the receiver.
Yeah. I mean,
that's as bad as it gets.
You can't get it back.
No, you can't. You can't get it back.
It's gone.
There is no DVR on that. That's live, bro. That's
and even worse, it gets replayed on Classic because the other team won.
Yeah.
And speaking of bad memories, you guys remember this last Super Bowl, what it reminded me of the comeback was when the Giants lost to the 49ers in the playoff game when they had the big lead and they botched the field goal at the end, which would have iced it. And also probably even another equally bad memory, the Michael Vick game with the 7 minutes plus when he came roaring back single-handedly than Deshaun Jackson
took
the punt.
But the Vick game wasn't a Super Bowl or a playoff game. I mean,
right. It reminded me like a shock. You know, like how did that happen? I can't even comprehend. Like I couldn't say exactly how they lost because so much happened in such a quick period of time. But I wanted to throw out another topic because I'm happy you're on today, Paul, because I disagree with you. I think Aaron Rodgers is definitely better, not definitely, but he's better than Brady, and you were short changing him because you were saying just he's more athletic, but I think he's as good from the pocket. And Hostetler, too, he may have been as good as Sims. He only actually started four games. Going into playing in the Super Bowl.
Andrew, you're talking better right now, or are you talking has had a better career?
Right now, I think Rodgers is a great pocket passer, and he could play the game. And the question I have in 2007 and in the first half of last Super Bowl, who do you think would handle the pass rush better, Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady? We saw 07, Justin Tuck, O.C., Strahan, Kiwi, when they were rushing Brady, he didn't have the athletic ability to deal with it. Aaron Rodgers would do better. We all laughed when we saw the 40 Brady when he did the 40-yard dash, how slow he was. But you saw why he was passed up in the draft, because he didn't have the physical ability. So
Andrew,
I think Aaron Rodgers is one of the all-time absolute. He has that great pocket.
Wow.
And he's smart, he's experienced, he's deadly accurate, he's got a stronger arm, he could elude the run. So I think he's more talented. And also John Elway, I think, was better too. He was physically more gifted. So the question I ask you is if the Patriots organization was exactly the same, Belichick, same owner, same everything, except instead of Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback, don't you think they would be equally successful, and who would do better in the Super Bowl against the pass rush, Rodgers or Brady? And what do you think of Elway too?
And why don't you go first, Paul?
All right, I'm gonna make this simple. I do think that part of the question that you're asking is who's the best fit for that particular spot, and I'm going to use an example to illustrate my question to you. If Big Ben and Eli Manning had swapped places, neither one of them would have won multiple Super Bowls. Eli would not have done it with Pittsburgh. Ben would not have done it with the Giants. There are reasons why guys are perfect fits for where they go.
Well, and teams also then build around that player's skills.
Without question.
Right.
It's about his skill set. It's about his demeanor. It's about his leadership skills. It's about his ability to execute in the clutch. It's about his ability to handle the media. It's about his ability to work with the head coach. You know, Big Ben and Eli could not have swapped places. I'm convinced of that. And I'm not going to tell you that Elway couldn't have won with the Patriots. What I am going to tell you is the Belichick-Brady combination is unbeatable. They are the best, and you can't split the two of them up. They are the best at what they do as a duo, and I'm going to say that he is the best quarterback. It hurts me. I love Johnny Unitas. He's the best I ever thought, but it's now Tom Brady.
Andrew, appreciate the call, man. I want to throw my two cents on this, too. I think Aaron Rodgers is the most physically gifted quarterback I've ever seen. Combination of ability to run, arm strength, throw balls into impossible tight spots, on the move, rolling to his left, throwing across his body.
He and Elway. He and Elway.
I'm happy to put Elway in the same category. No problem. Those guys can do stuff that Tom Brady is incapable of doing.
Agreed.
But that's a different question than the one that Andrew asked.
It is.
And Tom Brady, to me, is so far and away ahead of everybody else in terms of his mental discipline and toughness to always doing the right thing, never forcing the ball where it shouldn't go, taking what the defense gives you, and quite frankly, doing it without having an elite receiver with him, except for Randy Moss for a couple years, always having different guys around him, mm-hmm. changing personnel. Even today, if you tell me I'm picking one quarterback to win me a big game, I got to take Tom Brady. Have to.
You know, Andrew, I know you're a Giants fan. You've called up the show many, many times. Let me just remind you of this, and I don't want to take anything away from the Giants or Eli. But remember, okay, in Arizona, when Eli throws that touchdown pass to Plex, that game's not over because Tom Brady's the one throwing the Hail Marys at the end of the game, and thank goodness for Corey Webster knocking them away.
And by the way,
right?
I'm not even going to call that a Hail Mary. That was safety help.
With Jabril Wilson.
Who got there a little bit late, by the way. What the hell was Jabril Wilson getting over Randy Moss late, by the way? You stand over that man, and you do not let him come close to the ball. Corey Webster gets that ball by the fingertip.
I told Corey.
Randy Moss catches that damn thing in stride, and he's running. And it's funny. People always talk about that game, and they ask me what I think the biggest play was. That's the play I give them. It's the Corey Webster deflection. It wasn't the first down pass by Brady. It was the second down pass by Brady, if I remember right. And I'm telling you, this thing is thrown perfectly in stride.
Yes.
Randy Moss is
yes.
like this. And Corey Webster just...
I've often told Corey I'm glad that his gloves were at least a couple of millimeters thick.
Yeah.
Because, okay? Uh-huh. So that loss is not on Tom Brady. And by the way, the replay in Indianapolis, Wes Welker drops a catchable ball.
That would end that game.
Which ends that game. And, oh, by the way, after Ahmad Bradshaw.
By the way, that could have been a better pass, though.
Could have been.
Throw it behind them a little
bit. Little pressure by Tuck helped out. And then after Ahmad Bradshaw falls his ass into the end zone, guess what? Tom Brady converts a fourth down on the Patriots' final drive to be able to throw a 50-yard Hail Mary into the end zone, which, thank goodness, the Giants knocked down. But Gronk was pretty close to catching. So I love the fact that the Giants beat Brady and the Patriots in the Super Bowl twice. Don't get me wrong. I love that. And I love that Eli was a hero. But don't put those losses on Brady. Don't, because he was right there.
Though, I will also say this in fairness. I'm not saying it's Brady's fault. Two of the best offenses of all time also scored fewer than 20 points in both those games. So it's fair to say, and look, you want to give credit to the Giants' defense? No issues.
Terrific defensive front in both of those games.
Agreed. But you can also argue the Patriots' offense severely underperformed compared to what they had done up until those two games in those two seasons.
I think the question I would have for you then,
Paul,
is,
that 2007 Patriot team was the best offensive team I've ever seen.
Did they underperform, or were the Giants' defensive players that good that day?
And,
which can happen.
And there's no way to answer that.
There's not.
But you're right. That could very well be the case. But if you're going to be fair and say all these great things about Brady, I will say the two Super Bowls they lost, Patriots did score less than 20 points. And if they score 20 in those games, they're Super Bowl champions.
Eli has two rings. I have nothing else to say.
For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. This ended up being a good topic today. We had fun with it.
Very nice.
Good job on the calls, everybody. Tomorrow it'll be Paul and Lance with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Thanks a lot for joining us, and we'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.